ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्री इंद्र उवाच। प्रत्यानितः श्री इंद्र उवाच। प्रत्यानिति हि परमो भवता त्रयातन स्वभागा। दैत्याक्रंतं हृदय कमलं तद्गृहं प्रत्यबोधि। कालग्रस्तं कियदिदं अहोनाथ सुश्रुततां ते। मुक्तिस्तेषां नहि बहुमता नरसिंह परै किम्।
Translation and proverb by Srila Prabhupada. King Indra said, O Supreme Lord, you are our deliverer and protector. Our shares of sacrifice, which are actually yours, have been recovered from the demon by you. Because the demoniac King Hiranyakashipu was most fearsome, our hearts, which are your permanent abode, were all overtaken by him. Now, by your presence, the gloom and darkness in our hearts have been dissipated. O Lord, for those who always engage in your service, which is more exalted than liberation, all material opulence is insignificant. They do not even care for liberation, not to speak of the benefits of kaam, artha, and dharma. Purport. In this material world, there are two kinds of people: the devatas, demigods, and the asuras, demons. Although the demigods are attached to material enjoyment, they are devotees of the Lord, who act according to the rules and regulations of the Vedic injunctions. During the reign of Hiranyakashipu, everyone was disturbed in the routine duties of Vedic civilization. When Hiranyakashipu was killed, all the demigods who had always been disturbed by Hiranyakashipu felt relief in their general way of life. Because the government in Kali Yuga is full of demons, the living conditions of the devotees are always disturbed. Devotees cannot perform yajna, and thus they cannot partake of the remnants of food offered in yajna for the worship of Lord Vishnu. The hearts of the demigods are always filled with fear of the demons, and therefore they cannot think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, the engagements of the demigods is to think of the Lord always within the core of their hearts. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 6.47, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatinantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam sameyukta tamo matah. And of all yogis, he always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. The demigods fully absorb themselves in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become perfect yogis. But because of the presence of demons, their hearts are filled with the activities of the demons. There's their hearts, which are meant to be the abode of the Supreme Lord, are practically occupied by the demons. All the demigods felt relieved when Hiranyakashipu was dead, for they could easily think of the Lord. They could then receive the results of sacrifices and become happy, even though in the the material world. The Lord is majestically seated, Narsingadev, on the very, very beautiful throne of Hiranyakashipu. And he is now receiving the prayers of his devotees. The Lord likes this. The Lord likes his devotees to glorify him. The Lord is known as Uttama Shloka. One of his names, Uttama Shloka. It means he is a person who is glorified in the choicest of prayers. Even we remember in the Gaur Lila pastime of the Lord, we know that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would always remain consciously in the mode of being a Vaishnava devotee and cover himself, his real effulgence and his real glory by his own yoga maya potency, atma maya ya. But on some occasions, when he was overwhelmed by love for his dearmost associates, he would uncover and open the doors of his own personality to be revealed. So we remember how even at Shiva's Angan, at one point of time during the Mahaprakash Leela, we remember, the Lord went and sat, just like here he's sitting on the throne of Hiranyakashipu. The Lord decided to go and sit himself on the throne of Sri Vishnu. He said, now all of you offer me prayers. And we remember the whole story, how Haridas Thakur, Advaita Acharya, Gangadas Pandit, all the associates were there. And of course, Sridhar was called in afterwards. And for 21 hours, Saptaparhal Leela, the Lord, in the same mood as he is here. Here he is feeling affection for Prahlad, overwhelmed with love. His heart is overflowing with unbelievable love, flowing like the Ganga from his heart. In the same mood, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting, feeling love, so much of love for his devotees. And the devotees feeling love for him, in turn, was speaking his glories with hearts full of devotion. Indra over here is talking about the heart. What is the state of his heart? What is the state of his devotees as the demigod's heart? He said, our hearts, which are actually constitutionally the place for your residence. It is the word tad griham. Griha is house. Tad griham means your house. Our heart is his house. Not our house. It's my house is my house. And in my house I stay. Why should somebody else stay? I stay in my house. But our heart is not our place of residence in one sense. We'll come to that. But in my heart, the devotee's heart is the place for the Lord's residence. Tad griham, your griha, not mine. In the same mood like how a grihastha, when he welcomes deities, from that day onwards he signs off his house, sort of, not legally but spiritually, that, oh, now Gaunita has come, Jagannath Swami has come. Now I am no longer the legal owner, but I am not the true owner. Now I, manasa deho geho griha ar pilutvapade. I am giving it all to you, my dear Lord. So today we will try to examine what is this word, tad graham. This word of your abode. This we are conversing with the Lord's abode as Vaikunthanath. But let's talk about the Lord's abode here in the heart. Indra is talking about the heart. He's saying that my heart is now occupied not by you, but by fear. because the demon was there, he's described in three verses back as meningitis. Nityananda Prabhu could not pronounce that word because he can only chant Sanskrit. When I heard, I said, he said something else. He didn't say meningitis. Meningitis. I could really catch up that word. He's like the fever in the head. Meninges is the covering of the brain. Inflammation is called meningitis. Yeah? So he was like, fever in the head is, the fever in the stomach is all right, malaria, typhoid fever, and fever in the lungs, pneumonia, fine. But fever in the head, devastating. Our Nitya Krishna Prabhu had fever in the head, encephalitis, devastating, go into coma, you die sometimes. So he was like a fever in the head of the entire universe. So when the head is not proper, obviously the whole body is, you know, convulsing or unconscious or whatever, vomiting. So you have like that fever. So because of all this intense jwara, it is like a jagat jwara. Like a jwara in the entire jagat. Obviously all the demigods were also so much terrified. And their hearts were now occupied by, not by the Lord, but by fear. Bhakti, which we all are trying to learn, develop, bhakti is a thing of the heart. Bhakti is not a thing of the tongue or the limbs. Even though we say jivadav, bhakti begins with the tongue, but it does not begin with the tongue. Bhakti begins always with the heart. And the heart utilizes the tongue to chant God's names, eat Krishna Prasadam. The hand, the working senses and the knowledge acquiring senses, they act. But it actually begins from the heart. When we say something is the heart, it is the core of that particular thing is the heart. When we have a problem, and there are so many problems, and we discuss, let us get to the heart of the problem. That center of the whole thing. What is the heart of the problem? Maybe there are so many things, but what is the heart? Drive home the center point. So heart is the ugam sthan of this problem stems from here, and then all the other things are happening. So the heart is a center for the living being. The heart is a center of life. There are two types of heart: the physical heart and the spiritual heart. The physical heart is here on the left side of the chest, but that doesn't have to be necessarily the place where our real heart lies. A plant has no heart. Has no physical heart. That nobody has found that. But it has the living force. So where the living force resides is the actual heart. This is just the physical organ which is pumping blood. In our case, our spiritual heart overlaps the physical heart also. A plant has got no heart, but I'm told, I'm not a botanist, but I'm told that the soul lies somewhere in the lower portion, just above the roots, at that point. Now, what about our unicellular organisms like bacteria and amoebas? And they're just one cell. How can there be a heart in one cell? So, where is the heart of the bacteria? Well, that is in the nucleus. Because where life force generates in the bacteria is from the nucleus. So also the soul is in the nucleus. Because that's the source of life for the bacteria. So every living being has a heart. And where is that heart? It is a place where the soul resides. That is the heart. Why is the heart? Because it is a source, the ugam sthan of the life force, the prana shakti. Emanates from that place. But the heart is not just occupied by one resident. There are two residents in the heart. The heart, the soul is never alone. Never alone. Never, ever, ever alone. In conditioned state or in this liberated state, the soul is never alone. The heart always has along with him The second resident, his best friend, his guide, the source of his own life. That is a super soul. So our hearts occupied by two personalities, the soul and the super soul. What actually stays in the heart? We say this, the whole soul and super soul, but actually the heart is a seat. The heart is a seat of emotions. The heart is a seat of emotions. And here Indra's heart is occupied by the emotion of fear. So heart is a seat where emotions in the subtle state can stay. In the conditioned state, our hearts are occupied by lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, and illusion. These stay stuffed up in the heart. And because they are staying in the heart, whatever comes out of the heart is also based on, is tinged with these things. You understand? If something is in the heart, then whatever comes out of the heart must also be carrying with it these six things. So if whatever comes from the heart, the language, the things you see, the things you touch, the things you experience, everything is tinged with lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, illusion. If you're seeing something pure, like the Ganga, you will see stool in that. If you're seeing the deity, you will see stone. You see a pure devotee, you see his ordinary Baba, something. So whatever you see with the content of the heart, even though it is pure or impure, it is, as long as it's tinged with your consciousness, which is filled with these six things, you can only perceive in the environment these things. That is the state of a conditioned heart. There's a story I read in that book written by Pankajangri Prabhu about Narsingha Dev's Leelas. Many of you may have read that also. I don't remember the details, but I read it last time during Mayapur Yatra. That Narsingha Dev in the dream plunged his heart into this Mataji and brought out black colored things from inside. You read that story? He plunged his heart. People can do that. Even in Philippines, there are people who can tuck their hand into the body and come up with the tumor without even operating it. They can see a kidney stone or a gallstone. You put your bare hands. This is mysterious to modern mind, but I know that happens for sure. They plunge the hand in the body, and that there it comes out, and the gallstone is in his hands. And do a sonography afterwards, no stones. So if it can happen, if the ordinary man of this world can do that, and there's no blood. That is, there's no holes of his fingers there. It is mystical. Anyway, so mystic yogis can do so many things. So if it can happen for the human body, or ordinary jivatma can just put his hands and bring out some, stuff from inside, why can't the Lord do that? So Narsingha plunged his hands in the heart of this Mataji, this devotee, I'm not sure Mataji, this devotee, and he brought his, he said, why are these black things inside your heart? I remember the story of Amogha, son-in-law of Sarvam Bhattacharya, and how he's seeing the Lord Sakshat in his house. Imagine what glory, what grace, what mercy that Mahaprabhu is coming in your own house, the Lord of all lords. But because, as I said, your heart is filled with that. So you could only see this man is just ordinary. And Sarvam Bhattacharya and Sathi Mata, both of them were like completely engrossed in serving the Lord with cooking and all his hospitality and making him comfortable. And they were running around doing that. And they wanted to be sure that this Amogha does not come in. Because he was a professional criticizer. It is the only thing he could do is just criticize. Like Shishupal practically. The only thing, as a professional, his profession was being envious of people, Krishna. So they wanted to keep him away from this place. But he did come. He could sense that somebody, Lord is here. And he came and he spoke vile words, bad words of abuse to this great sannyasi, the Lord himself. And obviously, of course, it was too much. The Lord gave him a reaction and he developed cholera. Cholera in those days was death. Even now it is death for many a times. But those days it was sure death. So he was actually on his deathbed. You get one diarrhea of cholera, one diarrhea, and you collapse completely. Just one diarrhea you pass rice water stool, and practically half your water of the body just goes out, and your blood pressure falls, and you are practically dead. And if it goes on for a few hours, then your heart stops. So it was like a death call for Amoga. He was about to die, actually, for offending the Lord so bad. The Lord came in his house and came to his side. And what did he do? With his beautiful hands, Tavakara Kamala. But no Nakham here. There was no Nakham. Nakha was there, but not. He had nails, spiritual nails, effulgent nails. But they were not like Narsingadev's nails. Like Kamala. They were like soft. Tavakara Kamala. Only Kamala. No Nakham. So he touched with his beautiful, soft, graceful, loving hands, his heart. He put his hand on his chest. He said, Amoga, you are a son of a Brahmin. Why have you allowed these impurities to overcome your heart? Your heart is now filled with such nasty things. Why have you allowed these things to occupy your heart? And as soon as the Lord's hand touched, of course, he was purified completely. And he became a lover of God, lover of the Lord. Thakur Haridas, what a beautiful pastime. Disappearance of Haridas Thakur is going to come few days, Anna Chaturdashi. You can remember how Haridas Thakur, this great Acharya, whose heart was filled with love for the holy name. That holy name is a personification of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in the end, what was his desire? He said, my dear Lord, you have made me dance in so many wonderful ways. You made me eat the Shraddha Patra, which is to be given to the topmost Brahmins. It is definitely due to saintly personalities. But you made me eat the Shraddha Patra first. And that's a very prestigious thing to do. Who eats the first Shraddha Patra is very important. That means everyone else is sort of, junior to him or under him or like that. He's the senior most man. And Acharya Advaita, today is the appearance day of Sita Thakurani. But anyway, Advaita Acharya, he knew more than anybody else who is really worshipable. Namacharya. He first pathed through him. See, in this you made me dance. I'm born of a Muslim. Yavan. And you are giving me the glory of the topmost Brahman in society. You may be dancing so many ways. I have one desire. I said, whatever is your desire, the Lord will fulfill. Said, I know you are going to leave this world very soon. I do not want to see your last pastimes, final pastimes. So he first went around, took blessings from all the assembled Vaishnavas, Paramananda Puri, Paramananda Bharati, everybody else was there. And then he laid down and he put his feet on his heart. It says here, Hridaya Kamalam, beautiful words, heart like a lotus flower. Hridaya Kamalam. The Lord's lotus feet also are like Kamalam, lotus flower. So the lotus-like feet of the Lord were placed on the lotus-like heart of Thakur Haridas. And beholding, the lotus responds to what? To the moon. Who was the moon? The face of Lord Chaitanya. So beholding the moon-like face of Lord Chaitanya and the soothing, cooling feet of his beloved Lord on his heart again and chanting his holy name, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Just overwhelmed with that sound vibration. Went away. So this is the heart. Bhakti is a thing of the heart. The Lord resides within and therefore he sees whatever activities we perform. As we say in English, man sees outside and God sees inside. That's the difference between man and God. and the essential difference between man and God, that again, man can only look outside because he is bahir mukha. He can only think things outside. But the Lord is antaryami, so he can see things that are antar, inside. So the Lord is always conscious of his devotees' motivations and he rewards his devotees accordingly. What about your motivations? He can judge. Therefore, we say bhakti is a matter of not what externally you are doing. Well, that may be important in, as far as we work in an institute and all that, we should do whatever we expect to do. But consciously, we have to be aware at what a state of our heart. The Lord is going to only perceive, because he is next door neighbor of the soul, he is only going to perceive the emotions emanating from that heart. As we said, the heart is a seat of emotions. He is doing that bhakti out of sneha, kamad, krodhad. We say Kamsa also was remembering the Lord. But it was krodhad. So in Brahma Samhita says, you can remember the Lord in so many ways. In kam, krodh, sneha, whatever, so many. So the Lord is only going to perceive your, not your words, not your actions, not how you look, what your profile is. He's going to only perceive your, the state of your heart. Radhana Swami Maharaj was in Vrindavan. And devotees were telling, and somebody offered him, that time he was not Radhana Swami, he was a bhakta, is that you can become a personal servant of Srila Prabhupada and travel with him wherever you want. Would you like to do that? So he had by that time traveled all over the world and he had at last reached the land of Vrindavan and his heart was sort of merged in the glory of the Holy Dham. And he was not at all interested in, he thought this is the place I will stay till I leave my body. I'll stay here. So he was refusing to become Prabhupada's personal servant. And everyone said, what, you are in Maya? You are in deep Maya. You are in Vrindavan, but you are in Maya. You are denying to go with the Jagat Guru. And Maharaj could say that the devotees are not understanding him. He had a special affection for the Dham. And then Prabhupada was just walking by, leaving Vrindavan, and he offered his pranams to him, dandavat pranams, and he sat like this, Prabhupada looking directly at him. And Maharaj explains in his own memories that Prabhupada could look into my heart. He touched my heart. He looked into my soul. When a pure devotee looks at you, it is not a look like the way we look. We look and they glance with eyes of mercy. When we look, we are allowing light rays to come into our eyes and to be perceived by our retina. We are allowing things from outside to go inside. That is our seeing. But when a pure devotee sees, he glances outside. He is not taking in anything because there is nothing in the material world with the pure devotee wants to see. Like Radharani, when she was born, she had nothing in this world to see. A pure devotee of the Lord like Prabhupada never comes to see this world because there is what is the beauty of this world for him to see when he has seen Golok Vrindavan. But he only comes to glance on this world. And that glance is the glance of the Lord. What a pure devotee sees is what the Lord wants him to see. And the place where the pure devotee glances, the Lord deposits his mercy. So that's the power of a pure devotee's glance. He is not looking, he is glancing. He is blessing that individual or that thing or that event or whatever. If Prabhupada has seen you, that's it. Darshan pavita karo, ye tumhara guna. If he sees you and you see him, your spiritual life has begun. It's begun. So Prabhupada looked into Radhanath Swami's heart and he said one line. Vrindavan is such a nice place. And immediately Radhanath Swami got a confirmation, I should stay here. So he said, you like Vrindavan? Prabhupada asked him. Maharaj said, yes. Then you can stay here. Everyone could not understand. But Prabhupada could understand. Because the pure devotee is the external manifestation of the Lord in the heart. What does a pure devotee know when the pure devotee looks at you? How does he know? like we know Prabhupada was such a powerful personality. When Giriraj Swami came to meet him for the first time, Giriraj Das, I don't know his name at the time, was not Giriraj, but when he came to meet him, he must be in his attire, you know, worldly attire, whatever. He looked at him, and Giriraj Maharaj said, he looked at me, through the streets of New York, Chicago, right? He's from Chicago. Chicago. And he could look into my room, and he could look at my bathroom, and the door on, and the plaque on my, on the bathroom. Said, I am God. So the first thing Prabhupada asked Giriraj Swami is, you want to be God, you want to be servant of God. Tuck! He was shocked. How does this man know my heart? How can he see what I am really come here for? He's probably come here to, you know, learn from this Swami, Indian Swami, mystic yogi, whatever he is. He will teach me how to become God, because that's the goal of spiritual life. And he's at the heart of the problem, attacks. So you want to be God, or you want to be servant of God? And he was dumbfounded. Dumbfounded. He couldn't speak anything. Prabhupada could read people's hearts. For the matter, any pure devotee who has no material desires can read people's hearts. Why was Prabhupada so accurate in telling people what they needed to hear? We know so many times in the past time, right? Devotees coming on the Vyas Puja day and said, Prabhupada exactly knew what is in my heart and he told me to just do that. And I did it and this happened. How does a great soul know? They come up with the same problem, but it's different instruction will be given to this person, to that person. The pure devotee is in touch with the Lord in the heart. And because he's in touch with the Lord so closely, as he says here, this sloka is very beautiful to remember. He is most intimately united with me in yoga. That means the pure devotee is so integrated in his consciousness with the Lord's consciousness. So they are like practically two different consciousness, but sharing the same unified emotion of love. So he can see at a person, the karmi or a devotee or a journalist, whatever he comes, but Prabhupada gives the exact answer that person needs to hear, which we cannot. If somebody asks you a particular question, we sadhaka bhaktas will always answer most of the time the same question the same way. Prabhupada, what about this? Yeah, I've heard from my Guru Maharaj this. We have usually, you know, standard answer for standard questions. Because, you know, our knowledge is quite bookish, intellectual, more than from the heart. But we are in touch with the heart, then for the same question, he may say, shut up, or he may give you a very nice answer. So a different response may come through. Because, again, it is not based on mechanical, you know, observations. It is based on a dynamic understanding of the person's personality and what he needs to know at that particular point of time. Lord in the heart. Mahaprabhu Chaitanya would often refer to this phrase, Lord in the heart. Very, very often. I said, the name of Gupta. Murari Gupta. How does this name Murari Gupta come? Because Murari, the Lord who is the enemy of Murari, you are secretly keeping the Lord in your heart. Gupta. Therefore, her name is Murari Gupta. And then you tell Haridas Thakur, how? I'm a prisoner in your heart. The Lord is a prisoner. Now, we are prisoners, is it not? We are prisoners in this material world. You know, as Maharaj says, in a jail without bars, open jail, no bars, no guards. Nobody is there, but still we like this place. We don't want to get out. Right? That type of jail which the Lord has made. So beautiful that you're in the jail, you feel this is a very nice place for me to stay. I don't want to get out. But the Lord is the prisoner in... He is born in a prison, comes as a prison, but he becomes a voluntary prisoner in the devotee's heart. Sadhunam hridayam mahyam. Sadhunam hridayam tu aham. Madanyad te na janati. Naham tebhyo managapi. My Lord, the Lord, this is such a beautiful verse for, you know, for all of us to, you know, understand the nature of bhakti, because it is a thing of the heart. The Lord resides in the heart of his pure devotees, and pure devotee resides in his heart. Madanya tena janati. The Lord, the pure devotee knows nothing in this world except madanyad, other than me.
Naham tibhyo managapi. For me also nothing exists except my devotee. There's a one-to-one perfect, you know, one-to-one response practically for everybody. So this is the nature of the Lord. One-to-one, absolutely, one-to-one. And this integration is based on the exchange of love. When there is love between two individuals, you can know what is in the person, in the devotee, in the person's heart. Now, this is not necessarily always spiritual, of course. In the material world also, a wife may know exactly what her husband wants. If the husband even saying it, it's possible. And it is true. There are so many examples around us we can see. The wife knows because she's so devoted, she's so chaste, she's such an obedient servant of her wonderful husband. That she knows exactly, my husband wants this. If I do this for him, this at this point of time, the mother can know what my child wants just by looking at him. I think my child would, you know, want a feed or maybe want a wash or want, you know, whatever. Mothers can say better, I don't know. But but when it's integration of love, then you know. In a, even in a deep friendship also this can happen. When you are deep friends with somebody, you know what your friend wants. So it is a integration of the heart, which allows you to know what is in the opposite person's heart. When it is between two mortal individuals of this world, when the love is of the material nature, then there can be material understanding of the opposite person's desire. And when that is transposed into a spiritual relationship with that spiritual person, the disciple can know what my guru wants. Like we say, Shudakirti Prabhu would know what Prabhupada wants at a particular point of time. He would know. Just by signaling or eyebrow movement, do this, and then he would go and open that window, and he would do that, and he would close the window, and he would say this, and you know, something. Just subtle signs of a pure devotee's eyebrow movement and finger movement, whatever. And because he's so tuned in, it's a matter of tuning in. Bhakti is about tuning in with Krishna. It's about absorption. It's about absorption. Why do we say that during dramas, why the dramas are so realistic? Why is there any drama performance when done by Vaishnavas with a genuine intent, why do they come out so live? Because that character or characters under the expert directorship of a Vaishnav, they are so tuned into that particular role. They're playing the role of Krishna, Prabhupada, or Lord Chaitanya. They're so tuned in that actually that personality actually incarnates in their heart because by absorption. They're so absorbed, and therefore when they act, in other words, the movement, physical movements and tongue movements and dialogues, delivery and eye movements and all that, lights and everything. But actually the audience can see, wow, this is looking real. This is not a drama. This is really happening in front of my eyes. Why is that? Because each and every character is tuned in his bhakti to that personality whom he is representing. And the personality being pleased with his prayer sort of descends into his heart and empowers him to play the role exactly. Of course, that is short-lived. The drama is over, then where is food? Where is the bed? I'm tired. And what about that? And what about this? So we get into our mundane consciousness because it cannot go on too long, obviously. You know, this absorption is not our adhikar at that point of time to just be like that. And then, but that's why it is a matter of tuning in. And similarly, when we say Prabhupada spoke, or a pure devotee or the spiritual master speaks, what he speaks and what he does, we say the pure devotee is faultless, for example. He is a, what is that? Nirdosh, right? Nihidosh or Nidosh. He is Nidosh. Why is a pure devotee faultless? We say every human being has got four defects. He's got limited senses, he can become illusioned, and he become this and that, propensity to cheat. But because the pure devotee is in touch with the Lord, whatever he does is always perfect. Even though he's in a material body, he's not affected by these four defects. How did Prabhupada know, we wonder sometimes, that whatever he was doing was the right thing to do? to start Guru Puja for himself, to establish deity over here, to do this, to do that, to write this book. How was he getting all this inspiration? Prabhupada did so many things to make his devotees, you know, get married. Sannyasi is not supposed to do that. How Prabhupada do so many things? Start a morning program. Who told him to start his morning program? There's no institute has got this. Samsara Dava. And what song to put in Samsara Dava? What should be the first song of the morning? Why not Yashomati Nandan? How did he know that we have to start the day by glorifying the spiritual master? How did he know these things? How did he frame this 4-hour morning program from 5 to 9? Obviously, Prabhupada was in complete touch with the spiritual master. Prabhupada says that even in New York, sitting there in New York, it was Gaur Purnima day, we know, Prabhupada writes in his diary, right? The diary which he did not write, obviously, for anybody to read later on, but it was found in a trunk, that book. And Prabhupada writes that I am so 10,000 miles away from Sridham Mayapur, and my heart is remembering how all my God brothers and God sisters in Chaitanya Mart and everybody else are glorifying the Lord. Festivities going on, there is Gaur Leela going on, so many things. I'm all alone over here. But I'm happy. But I know that my spiritual master wants me to be here. And I'm feeling at every moment the presence of my spiritual master in my life. That he is with me always. So, guru consciousness is non-different than Krishna consciousness. For Prabhupada's devotees, we see Prabhupada's disciples many times. They seem to be having more love for Prabhupada than Krishna sometimes. But it is not siddhantically wrong. It is perfect. Because actually there is no difference between Prabhupada consciousness and Krishna consciousness. You talk, tell them to talk about Krishna, they may say a few things. You talk about Prabhupada, they will say many, many things. There's so much to say about Prabhupada. Their hearts are filled with Prabhupada practically, day and night. So, for a sadhaka, the guru actually represents Krishna in their life. He is not Krishna, but he represents Krishna. When he speaks, Krishna speaks through that devotee. When he glances at you, it is like Krishna glancing at you. When he praises you or he is happy with you, gives you a smile, be sure that Krishna is smiling actually at you. Through the guru, he is smiling. Right? So that the guru, the pure devotee, is a transparent via media between the disciple and the Lord. So till we can really access the Chaitanya Guru in the heart, the soul and super soul are so close, but there is no access. Imagine. How close are the soul and super soul? I mean, they are just so, I mean, there is no way of understanding how close. Actually, the closest you can ever imagine, two things can be, that's how close they are. Is 1 millimeter close or 0.5 millimeter? No, as close as you can imagine anything to be to another object. That's how close soul and super soul are. But the power of Maya is that between the two, there is a thin layer of the veneer of Maya, and the soul and super soul, of a super soul can access the soul anytime. Mataha, smritir, jnanam, apohanam cha. How does a small calf know where is the mother's nipple? How do these small animals, when they are born, they jump and they spontaneously go towards the mother's nipple to drink milk? How do they know? And they know how to suck also. And the moment that, you know, that animal is a little bigger, he knows he has to attack and catch. He becomes a predator and he catches the prey. Who does that? Now, Govindasi Mataji came the other day to our temple and she said, all this is done by the super soul and the heart. But the godless civilization of the scientist world used the word intuition instead. There is nothing like intuition in this world. It's a word which is coined by the atheistic scientist to explain phenomena which cannot be explained, you know, in the whatever you call logical way or rational way or scientific way. Why did Kekule, the scientist, how did he know that, you know, the benzene ring is 6 carbon atom? Benzene has got a ring. Benzene is C6. Right? Now he just saw a snake with its tail in his mouth. Now nobody sees a snake with a tail in his mouth. But he saw that vision and he knew this is the benzene ring. The carbon atoms are arranged. There was no spectroscopes that time to really understand how the benzene ring is arranged. There is no way of understanding the, spectroscopic configuration of the carbon atoms in a benzene molecule.
But he got a flash and he knew that, yes, they must be all in a ring, not in a, not in other diverse ways the valences can be arranged. But they were, who told him? Who showed him this snake in the mouth, with the tail in his mouth? That was not intuition. Because he, Kekule was so much engrossed in finding this, the basis of carbon atoms, in all organic matter is carbon. And he was an organic scientist, organic chemistry scientist. The Lord revealed to him, yes, this is the carbon atom, this is the way it is. You go and find out, you go and prove it in the lab and you'll see it, it comes out like that. And it happens. Paramatma, Chamatkar. Archimedes' principle, he came out, I said, from his bathroom, naked, jumping. I got it. Archimedes' principle of floating, buoyancy. But you're so tuned into Matah Smritir Gyanam. You want this gyan of understanding how boats float in the water, even though they are heavier than water. This is the principle. He wants to know so much. Why boats which are, you know, 500 tons and, not 500 tons, much more than that in weight, how they can float on water? Which is, water is water. It's a soul. Water, how it is not sinking? So there is a principle, Archimedes' principle. Of course, there is Krishna's principle. It is Krishna's principle. It is not Archimedes' principle, to be more specific. But it was revealed through Archimedes. So there is nothing like intuition in this world. The honeybee, how does the honeybee know that he is supposed to be subservient to the queen bee? How do they follow Varnashram and they have no knowledge of anything? The drones go out to collect honey, and they collect the honey, but they don't eat it. They collect it and they modify it into a particular type of royal jelly, which is the food for the queen bee, because she is the boss. She is the master. She is the god or the goddess, whatever. Goddess. And she feeds on that royal jelly and she grows big and becomes very fertile. So she can generate more worker drones and all that. How does honeybee know that they are not supposed to eat that, even though they are hungry, and keep it there and feed? Why do they have obedience and allegiance towards the queen bee? The subservientness is among human beings, is it not? You're subservient to somebody. You are my master. I'm your servant. But honeybee knows that he is the servant and the queen bee is the master. How does it know this? There's no way to explain it rationally or scientifically except through the agency of the super. So the Lord in the heart tells, he is your master. Serve this and you'll be happy. She will give you your food. Whatever you need, she will give it to you. So this is bhakti. When Rupa Goswami wants to serve Sanatana Goswami on his birthday, he wants to serve Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, elder brother. I must serve him on his birthday nicely. But I know, Mandalapati, they were Mandalapati, but Tuchavat, now nothing is there. So then automatically one beautiful young girl comes carrying a fruit basket with milk and sugar and all these things. I said, now, you know, you go and, this is just for you, Baba. This is for you. Just what I give to. And then she makes, Rupa Goswami makes this nice kheer and all these nice preparations. And Sangha says, what? How did you make this? You don't have anything practically. They were eating bati. You know, Sanatana Goswami used to eat that bati. Made of, you know, wheat flour, made into a ball, put in the fire, roasted, and eat. That's it. There's no question of sweet rice and all. So then describe the girl. Oh, this is Srimati Radharani. Sadhanam Hridayam Mahyam. Radharani knows that what is Rupa Goswami's desire. So she came. Radharani knows what is Krishna's desire. That's why she is so great. I said, Krishna wants to be with me alone. So she went out of the Ras Leela and then Krishna was with her alone. So in this, when there is love, there is tuning in of consciousness. So we are like those sadhaka bhaktas. We are talking about Narsingadev over here. We have our black, myself, black heart, dirty heart, filled with all these anarthas. And we are praying to the Lord that please make my heart pure by devotional service so that you can come and descend with your lotus feet upon my Hridaya Kamalam. The heart, the seat is like, the heart is not like a ordinary platform, like a wood or something. It is the seat of like a lotus flower. It's beautiful. Everything in spiritual life is beautiful. It's not like a flat plank where the Lord sits, of plank plywood. The Lord is sitting on the lotus-like heart of his devotees. So please come and descend over there. That is our prayer. And if you are faithful to our Guru, yasa devi para bhakti yathada vitatha gurau, tasya gatita yartha prakashante mahatmanah. If you are faithful to our Guru and Sri Krishna, then he will actually descend and reveal, as he says, removes all gloom and darkness, the purport says here. He will remove all the darkness of our heart. Om Agyanti Mirandas, all the darkness will go away and be illuminated by Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.